Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, the last time I said that this would be the last interview about service, but I don't know if that's actually true. I've got some reports that the wonderful interview I did with Carol Wirtz didn't have good sound, and especially when Carol was speaking. So I'm trying to get a hold of her right now, for those of you who are interested, and to redo the interview. So I think we're going to come back to service in a little while, but meanwhile, we're going to go on to something that's very connected with compassion, love, and service, and that is forgiveness. I was casting about, actually, in my mind to figure out where to go next, and Maureen O'Shaughnessy's name came up in a number of different ways, and I realized that what I wanted to do was to talk about something that I heard about in Hawaii and have had some contact with, but Maureen has had a lot of contact with, and she's here to talk about Ho'oponopono, which is a Hawaiian, comes from the Hawaiian culture, and then I think I should let you speak with Maureen about this, or at least listen to Maureen about this. Maureen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Phyllis.
Yeah, thanks so much for doing this at the last minute. That's great.
It's fun. It's always fun to talk with you, and especially about things Hawaii that are very dear to my heart. So.
Right, great. Well, anyway, let's start with your Reiki story. Can you share with us a little bit about your story of Reiki and how you came to Reiki?
I'll actually tie it in to relationship with my hula teacher, which is my cultural connection in Hawaii.
Right.
Actually, back in early 1991, my hula teacher, and in Hawaii they say kumu hula, kumu meaning source, literally, and so a teacher is the source of your knowledge or wisdom in that area. And she was dying of cancer, and I had really the privilege of having about a month to be her caregiver before I went off to work on a work project in Phoenix, Arizona. And I felt really helpless because there were things I could do for her physical needs, but there didn't seem to be much I could do at the time to make her more comfortable or soothe her in many ways. And I decided to start massaging her feet. Her feet didn't hurt, and I could do that. And she found that very soothing.
Wonderful.
And she started to say to me, "Pua'ena, your hands are so soothing." And Pua'ena is the Hawaiian name she gave me many years ago. And so then she started to ask me to lay my hands on her wherever she had pain. And I was shocked and blown away because I didn't know it would be helpful. And she seemed to find it was very soothing and helpful. I thought maybe I had a special gift. I'd heard of people who had healing hands, and it kind of excited me. But at the most, I was just grateful that I was able to do some small thing that brought her some comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Wonderful.
To fast forward, maybe 6 months from then, after I had gone to Phoenix to do this work project, and I met a friend there who happened to have just taken first degree Reiki.
Oh, wow.
And so she gave me a couple of treatments and said, and I didn't feel a whole lot, but it felt good for me. I felt a relief. I felt like I'd been thirsty and just had a big drink of water. It's like, so I knew it was good for me. And she suggested I take the first degree class coming up. And my thought was, my motivation to take Reiki in the beginning was simply to figure out what it was I was able to do for Ho'oulu that made her feel better. And that sort of began my journey of Reiki. And I had the first degree class and wasn't sure it really worked for me. I didn't feel much. I didn't feel much energy, and other people did, and they saw colors and I didn't. But I was thrilled about the fact that the partner I practiced on in class seemed to really feel warmth in my hands. And so that was my little bit of validation I needed. And so when I finished first degree, I hungrily ran around and put my hands on anybody who would let me to try and just get some evidence that something was really happening. And it was a few years, I later took second degree with Jessica, my Reiki master, and then about 3 years later hosted a class for her and was just moved by many experiences that were, I would call spiritual experiences, in my, in that class that I hosted for her. And that became my little, drawing, I guess, to begin my process of becoming a Reiki master. And that year, especially that I worked closely with Jessica, in my master preparation was when, a lot of things in my life turned around and started to move very quickly, and I haven't looked back since. So that was in 1995. I was initiated as a master, and life has been a joyful journey ever since.
You actually wrote a book about that joyful journey. Is that true?
I did. It's titled My Naked Journey.
And, I see.
And the reason it was naked is I sort of fell into writing stories in my newsletter. It started off just, you know, here are the upcoming classes. Please come and please tell your friends. And some friends of mine said, you know, you better make it more interesting. So I thought I was going to write about Reiki, and it just never seemed to happen. I kept writing about all these little things I did in my own life that made my stress greater and how silly that was. And, mm-hmm. and it was this journey that when I look back, I realized that Reiki was really the catalyst and the ongoing nourishment that I believe brought me to a place of feeling much more self-actualized and living more authentically in my life. And I absolutely know that Reiki brought me to that place. Uh-huh. And so the book is basically a compilation of about 7 years worth of articles and stories about how Reiki made me much more self-aware.
Wow, great. Wonderful. Well, for those of you who want to access this book, you can go to Maureen's website, which will be on the e-card, on the website of the radio show. So that's a good source.
Great.
Yeah. So Maureen, over the months, I have, since the beginning of the year, we've had interviews about, love and what are the different kinds of love or, you know, is Reiki really unconditional love? Is there such a thing as unconditional love? Is love, do you have to love someone to be compassionate with them? And what is compassion and gratitude? I did a number of interviews about gratitude. It seemed like love and compassion and gratitude all were wrapped into my New Year's program. And then now we've come to the end of that segment, and when I thought about interviewing you for Ho'oponopono, I had in my mind, of course, that it was more like service or gratitude. And then when you said forgiveness, I realized, well, that's also connected. So can you tell us a little bit about the source of Ho'oponopono and what does that mean? And does it come from a hula tradition? And
you know, I will. It's not directly from the hula tradition, although it's very much it's an integral part of the Hawaiian culture. And that goes back to the Hawaiian belief system. And I'm going to talk about the traditional perspective of Ho'oponopono. And I will mention that it's become much more well known through some recent best-selling authors for lack of a better way of saying it, more New Age perspective. And and I'll talk a little bit about some of those differences too. But the word ho'o in Hawaiian means, in fact, my hula teacher's name was Ho'oulu. Ulu is breadfruit literally, but it also means fruition and growth. And so she was someone, ho'o means to cause or to bring about. So her name, Ho'oulu, was to bring about growth, fruition, and implied in that is understanding. So the word ho'o means to cause or bring about. The word pono, by itself it can mean correct or right or in perfect order. And it's a very potent word in the Hawaiian culture because it implies a lot of depth to it. So not just literal correctness, but rightness in the greater sense. And so Ho'oponopono really means to set things right and to come into, and you can look at it as coming into alignment. It also means also moving or taking care of anything that's in the way, any obstacles in the way of wholeness and rightness. And there's a one of the Hawaiian elders, her name is Mary Kavena Puku'i, Tutu Puku'i, and she was one of the dictionary authors. I mean, she's like the ultimate authority in so much of the Hawaiian culture. And she described Ho'oponopono in the culture as getting the family together to find out what is wrong, maybe to find out why someone is sick or the cause of a family quarrel. Then with discussion and repentance and restitution and forgiveness, and always with prayer to set right what was wrong. And implied in that description are a lot of values and beliefs. It, one of it is implied that even if someone is sick, it is because of some, the word in Hawaiian is pilikia, or trouble in some place, between people mostly. And so the Hawaiians did believe that physical illness was very much related to our emotional states and our relationships. Yeah, so it had that underlying belief. It also had the perspective of all of this comes from a connection with source, whether it's God. And what was interesting is Ho'oponopono was a very integral part of the culture pre-missionary contact in Hawaii. And then even after missionary contact, what it became was then it would be prayer to the Christian perspective, but prayer was still a very important part of it.
Interesting.
So lots of things there.
Yeah.
My own personal experience with Ho'oponopono was within my hula training. And there had been some undercurrents between some of the members. And it's often little, nitpicking things where people would talk, oh, she does this, and rah, 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 that kind of thing. And one day, Ho'oulu just sort of called us all together and said, "We are going to do Ho'oponopono." And we're all like, okay, whatever that is, because not everybody knew. And some of the structure that was set that she did is, first of all, there's usually an elder or someone, but who is closely involved in the situation within the family or the community, would facilitate the conversation. And we were to each speak on whatever the issue was or the topic, and we were to speak from a place of responsibility. In other words, we had to share what our pain was, or our difficulty was, or our problem was, and what our contribution to that was. And which was very interesting. So it wasn't like, well, she always does this, and he does that, and da 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 da. Is that was not an acceptable way of discussing it. It would be discussed with from that self place of self-responsibility. And there would be no rebuttal, no defending yourself or whatever. Everyone would in that was involved would have their say and speak their truth. And then there would be prayer of some kind. And then it would go around the circle again. And this would happen until everything felt pono or right. And we went till 3 o'clock in the morning. Because people were very righteous, and it was like, this isn't right, or this isn't fair. And so it's not where even the facilitator, even Ho'ulu, wasn't the one to say, well, you should be this or that, or have any authority in terms of telling us how to resolve it. Is we were just put together, the space was held, go to that prayerful place, and then go again until all the forgiveness really came out, is where it was.
Wow, how beautiful.
It is.
Yeah. So, as with everything, I think there are really gifts that are offered from a lot of different Aboriginal cultures or natural cultures in different places. And the Hawaiians have certainly lent a lot of their culture to the Western world through what we might call New Age perspectives. And I'm just wondering how people use this. Is it kind of like mediation or a way of resolving your emotional issues, or what are they
It
doing with it now?
And I would say it went through like a lot of things in the Hawaiian culture where it sort of faded and the Western culture sort of became the norm. And whether it was even, and even, Western religion and things like that were more the norm. And so Ho'oponopono was not well known or used in a lot of families or, and again, those that were really embracing the Hawaiian culture at home, it was an integral part of it. It would be just, but there were also the times it's sort of like, you know, shut up, sit down and do what your parents tell you kind of thing, which was also observed in my years there. And, but there have been people who recognize the wisdom and the sweetness of the Hawaiian culture and have brought it into, for example, mediation. There is definitely, and in any, and for places like at Kamehameha Schools, which is a school system that, is for people of Hawaiian descent. And like in our hula training, so Ho'oponopono was very much embraced as part of our cultural experience. It has been brought to the table in negotiations. I believe even in some of the, some political debates and things like that, not in terms of an election, but in terms of trying to work together to come to solutions, and that they will use this approach, if not necessarily, but it's this idea of recognizing that if everybody has their say, and again, it's the assumptions that go along with it, is that, you know, everyone has a right to do things, or and everyone has their perspective. And, but the self-responsibility, I think, is a big piece of that. And so in the, what I wanted to mention briefly, because many people who hear, have heard today of Ho'oponopono have heard of it through, Joe Vitale's book called Zero Limits. I don't know if you're familiar with the book or not.
No, I'm not.
And Joe Vitale was one of the speakers on the film The Secret on Law of Attraction. He's done a lot of work over it. So he's a leader in, personal growth and life success venues, and he has his own story of, you know, coming from living on the streets to, you know, finding success in his own life. And he heard of a man in Hawaii named Dr. Ihaleakala Hugh Len, and he'd heard these stories that Dr. Hugh Len had, using Ho'oponopono, without ever physically meeting these inmates in the state mental hospital, basically emptied out the ward for the criminally insane. And so Joe couldn't believe that and ended up actually having a conversation with Dr. Hugh Len. I've met Dr. Hugh Len, so I heard him tell his story personally. And what he's a psychologist, and he was hired part-time to work with the state hospital to take this ward that no one else wanted to work with. And his story goes is he literally had the folders of the inmates in his office at home. He wasn't even at the hospital. And he would, and it kind of ties into this lovely connection with how we can have distance Reiki and distance connections and have amazing things happen when we're not physically interacting. And so he did a process, a very simple process that's in Joe Vitale's book, with each of the inmates. And it came from the belief, and this is taking the Hawaiian perspective of self-responsibility to what I would probably describe as a little bit more metaphysical even. And the metaphysical perspective is there is absolutely nothing in my experience that is not a reflection or a mirror of me. And his teacher was a Hawaiian kahuna named Morna Simeona. And she took, in the 70s, took the Hawaiian Ho'oponopono traditions from her training and culture, and applied it to what we would just say is the nth degree, is that there's lit we are self-responsible for everything in our life and everything we experience, even the person across the street that is, you know, beating up somebody or whatever. So Dr. Hugh Len would look at these folders and look at the people, and he would ask himself, sort of, why did you cross my path in life? And then he would repeat these four simple phrases, and he would say, I am sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. And I love you. And that was it. And he would just keep repeating this and look at that and just own that whatever was crossing his path with this person was, he had a part in that and was asking for forgiveness. And as the story went, some of them stabilized, were moved to other things. Some people got pardons, whatever it was, but that ward was basically closed. Wow. And so Joe Vitale, once he studied with Dr. Hugh Lan, and so there's been a movement over the last, well, probably 5 or 6 years. In fact, when I when we had our Reiki Alliance conference in Hawaii, and I wanted to have the theme Ho'oponopono for a variety of reasons, but I felt coming into rightness or coming into harmony and balance was what I wanted the theme of our conference that I was hosting to be. And there were Reiki masters from Europe who had heard of Ho'oponopono, but from Joe Vitale's work. And right. So it was a lovely global connection that had already traveled thanks to his publicizing it from that approach.
Right. So can you repeat, Maureen, the phrases, I am sorry, please forgive me, and then what was the third one?
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Uh-huh.
Gratitude. And I love you.
Uh-huh.
And so the instructions are basically, no matter what issue there is in our life, nothing, it doesn't matter what there is, we can hold a person or a situation in our attention and just repeat these. And it's not, the thing is about forgiveness and the saying I'm sorry is it's important not to go into a place of blame, because blame is diminishing, and right. and real forgiveness isn't about blame. It's an honoring, it's a recognizing that,
right.
And the same other piece of it is, in other words, even though someone may be doing something that I am upset about, or I feel that they're doing me wrong in some way, I still hold that place of, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. So to thank someone for the wrong they're doing us, or to, you know, say, please forgive me when I feel, you know, unjustly treated,
right,
is a very powerful process.
That is.
And it's not an intellectual process. It really tends to, just because it's simple, tends to go to the heart.
Right, right. Well, it's amazing. When I look at these sentences, I'm sorry, which for me is about compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me is forgiveness, of course. Thank you is gratitude. And I love you is about love, obviously.
Yes.
So it feels like, let's see, it feels like there is an understanding of this human process that we go through that brings us to another state of being.
Yes.
And I wonder, does that feel like the same bridge that Reiki gives us, in the sense that we can lay on the table and I can be emotionally fraught, just totally mm-hmm. out to lunch, and, you know, feeling like I'm, you know, I'm maybe not worthy of something, or I'm angry with somebody, and then I receive a Reiki treatment, and then all of a sudden it's like to another state of being. And I'm just wondering, do you see this as the same bridge, or is it similar, or?
I'm definitely similar, and I don't know that I could say it's the same bridge, but that's mostly because I have no understanding on that cognitive level what really happens with Reiki, other than I know I love it and it works, and it's something uh-huh. that I value. And the same with this process is there's a, I would say, a mystery to it. It's like it works, and I don't really know how.
Uh-huh.
And yet it takes us to a place of wholeness. And I would say that's what I would say is similar, is that there's this place of wholeness, a letting go of some kind of, I feel a lot of the times when I'm receiving Reiki, whether in self-treatment or from somebody, and in person or in long distance, it's really about, for me, it seems to be more about letting go of whatever, obstacles I have, or whatever resistance I'm holding. And when I let go of that, then everything is whole and well and good.
Uh-huh.
And this reminds me of a story tied in with the whole self-responsibility thing. A personal story is a few years back, I was really upset because I had ordered a new phone from my cell phone company, and I got back from my travels and it hadn't arrived, and I was getting ready to go to one of the Reiki Alliance conferences in the Netherlands, and I needed a phone that had international capabilities. And so I called the phone company, and they first of all said, well, no one was home, it got returned. And I said, no, that can't be, it's my mailbox service. And turns out anyhow that it was an incomplete address on their part, and it got returned. Well, then I was told that there were no more of those phones left, and if I wanted a similar phone, it was going to cost me $40 instead of free, like my, you know, my renewal of my contract was.
Right.
And I got very angry and very upset, and I called two or three times and asked to speak to different supervisors, and they just got more and more snippy and more, to the point where I said, fine, I'm going to go find a different cell phone company. And I saw what aggravated it even more was I saw an ad for my phone company, offering this same phone that they said they didn't have any more in inventory to new customers.
Oh, great.
And so I called back and I was just furious. And they said, well, sorry, that inventory is a different part of the company and we can't access it. So we cannot give you that phone. And so what I did in my fury and righteousness and, oh, I was just all over it. I called my dear friend Liza, who you know, and I said, I need a Reiki treatment. And went over to her place. And in fact, we had even planned to trade treatments. We do that regularly. And so I got there and I said, I need on the table first. And so she gave me a treatment and I asked her to do the mental treatment process so that I could really let go of that. And as I lay on the table, where the thoughts would just sort of randomly float as I relaxed and let go of a lot of my charge, what happened was I realized, what do I really want? I want the phone because I'm leaving in 10 days for the conference. And if originally I had to pay $10 for that, those features, I would have, or $40, I would have paid it. So just get over myself and get the phone. So I got to that place of peace and resolution and with that. But then when I gave Liza her treatment, it went to an even greater level of self-responsibility, which is what I feel the Ho'oponopono ties in so profoundly. Because really one of the basic premises is that, it's not, we speak from our place of responsibility, even in the old traditional style, and not that someone is doing it to us, which is what I felt very victimized by my phone company. And then as I was giving Liza her treatment, where I got to was I realized that I was like a match or a mirror to all of these problems with the phone company because of my lack of trust that things were going to work out fine and that my phone would arrive. And, you know, I had this little undercurrent of concern or edginess, anxiety about things. And so when I relaxed and I went, oh, I got the customer service representative from hell because I was in that same place of upset. So when I went to that final place of, okay, I just attracted all this to my experience and it's what it is and I can go on with it. So the next day I called to order the phone and pay the $40 and I got a customer service representative who said, well, you shouldn't pay for this. This was our error. And so waived all the fees and overnighted the phone to me. And I believe that is where we get to with Ho'oponopono is that place of self-responsibility in the world that even things that look completely randomly not our fault or our doing,
right.
Fault I think is not a good word, but is that when we come to a place of peace and forgiveness of ourselves again, is that's where everything falls into place and comes full circle into rightness.
Well, that's a really beautiful story, and I have many stories like that, both that ended in the way that you described and also the ones where I was very attached to somebody being wrong, and so that just continued the whole situation.
Yes.
And it's interesting because one of the things that I used to, you know, kind of freak out about was this whole thing about, you know, if somehow you got cancer or something, you know, you were in a bad car accident or something, people would immediately say, well, how did you bring this on? You know, like,
yes.
What is, and I'm just going, gag me. And because it always seemed like blame. But then
yes.
When I realized that I had cancer and I wanted to blame somebody else, but of course I couldn't, I realized at that moment that that was really true, that, you know, in my choices, I made a decision. And it was a somewhat unconscious decision, but nevertheless, it was still my decision. And it was much more relieving to me to be able to own that rather than to blame it on a food I ate or, you know, something that they put in food that gives you cancer or, you know, the cigarettes that I smoked when I was 18 and so on. So that was a very freeing kind of experience.
Yes, and it's empowering when we realize that everything that we have is, at least on some degree, I definitely believe that, and it is a belief, is, you know, something that we have in on some level and frequently unconsciously generated it or created the possibility of that. Then we're also empowered then to not have that.
Right.
It's very, and I think what you said also about the whole thing about blame is incorrect. It's the same as in the Ho'oponopono, is it's not, when we say, you know, you come from a place of responsibility, it's not saying, oh, you know, I was awful, I was bad, or I was cruel, I was whatever. Because the truth is, whenever we make choices, on whatever level, there's usually something in there that something that we're reaching for, some relief, some comfort. So, you know, even with children at home, and they say, you know, when they have Ho'oponopono, and they say, well, he took my, you know, my toy. And when they got to the core of what it was, is why this brother took the toy of his other brother, is, you know, he didn't believe he could have it if he didn't take it, or he felt like he, you know, didn't get things he wanted. But there was, again, there's that place of there's either a fear inside or there's some lack or doubt that's there. And so if we're willing to take the responsibility for something, we can get to the core of what, you know, what triggered that choice or that behavior. And then we get to a place of self-forgiveness.
Right. Right. Well, one of the things that this brings to mind, which may or may not be an appropriate connection.
We're all connected, so
yeah,
anything
okay,
is good. Yeah.
Okay. So I wrote on my blog today because one of the discussions that I've been having a lot since the earthquake in Japan was this whole thing about sending Reiki to Japan. And for those people who have sent Reiki and sent money and are doing things to assist the people in Japan, I applaud them. I don't have any judgment about that. I think it's great. And I know that it comes from a good heart. And at the same time, I've been trying to figure out, as sort of a representative of Reiki, what could I do? And should we collect money? Should we send Reiki? If we send Reiki, what should we send it to? And I always get caught in these things. And I think having it be Japan this time really put it on the front burner, because it means that a lot of us are very connected to Japan, just simply because that was the place where Mikao Usui was. A lot of the cultural norms are, as far as I'm concerned, are inherent in the practice of Reiki and so on. So then I got, a few days ago, I got this email from several different sources about Dr. Emoto's prayer of forgiveness for the water in Japan. And I realized that that was something that I could totally get behind. And I felt like also that Reiki would be very effective at coupling this attitude and this prayer and this desire to have water be listened to and also be treated as a living entity, so to speak.
Yes.
I mean, and I realized that it wasn't just the water in the nuclear power plant, which is what he really concentrated on, and his prayer of forgiveness for the water there. But I thought, you know, this water that was the wave, that was the tsunami.
I hadn't done that connection. That's wonderful.
You know, was like the bad guy in this whole story. One of the bad guys in the whole story. And, you know, there's something about that just irritates me, because I feel like, we're on the planet. We are subject to the powers of nature, and that, you know, in the Aboriginal days, the tribes used to create that as being a message or being a gift or being something, but definitely we weren't made to be victims. And this is the part that always feels degenerative and very like a lose-lose situation. The wave is bad, the earthquake is bad, we're victims, and so there's a kind of a lose-lose situation. Whereas if we turn around and forgive the wave and forgive the water that was in the wave, then it can, the whole situation can right itself. And there's also the topic of drinking, simple drinking water for those people. So I don't know, it was just my floundering around, but I'm just wondering, in giving you this connection, if you can become more clarifying.
Oh, I love it. And thank you for that, because there, I just want to share my own places. Okay. I have, just in my own personal philosophy in life, really don't believe we're victims. I mean, that's something that just doesn't. And I think when we perpetuate anyone being a victim, I don't think it serves them. And so when I have, you know, all of the emails and things we get from people, send prayers to Japan, and, you know, and yes, money to rebuild. Absolutely. If, you know, I feel inspired to do those kinds of things, but to feel pity or compassion for people as victims just doesn't work for me. I want to go in the other direction. So even the things about Dr. Emoto's water at first was, it just felt like another wave of people, like, send Reiki to these poor victims of whatever, and I didn't want to participate. But as you were talking, first of all, I thought, how perfect is, again, the Hawaiian culture does recognize, as you said, many Aboriginal cultures do, of this connection, that the planet is alive, that there's life in everything. The Hawaiians absolutely believe that the mana, the life force, is in the stones and in the land, and not just even in the plants and animals and
right.
and so forth. And so the water is something that's very respected and so forth. And so and then Dr. Emoto, I find his work, fascinating and illuminating, that he's found these influences on water from consciousness, from our focus
right.
and our thoughts and prayers
right.
and so forth. And so I love it. It's like doing Ho'oponopono for
right.
the water period. And again, why not ask for forgiveness for all of the things we do that create imbalance on the planet?
Right.
And that this tsunami and the earthquakes, I feel are certainly, an appropriate reaction or reflection to that. And and I find I also came across, and I don't know if you saw it or not, there was an email message that sort of went viral around on all over the place of a woman named Anna, I believe, from Sendai, Japan, who was talking about how wonderful it was in the recovery time after the tsunami, of how people were treating each
right.
other differently and,
right.
and so forth. And we see that a lot. And so it is also that tied in with the, you know, if we look at those four phrases from the modern version of Ho'oponopono is, you know, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. And I mean, even thanking for the disruption, the wake up call, the,
right.
you know, whatever it is, just feels so appropriate.
Right.
So I'm personally inspired from your connecting the dots to, I am going to do this Ho'oponopono process for Japan in general with just the whole, you know, natural upheaval and whatever ramifications came from that. So,
right.
so that was inspiring.
Well, thank
huh.
you.
Yeah.
Well, the thing of it is I have always felt, let's see, how can I say this? You know, as individual human beings, we all have our bumblings, and we walk into a room and we instantly, you know, are so excited about seeing the people that we love. We say a bunch of stuff, and then afterwards, you know, somebody says, you know, you didn't know what was going on and you said exactly the wrong thing. And then I think, well, but that's just me. So I have this feeling that the earth just is being itself. And if we can't just accept the earth, like we accept that the sun comes up and it changes times all the time. Well, not in Hawaii, but in other
Yeah.
places.
Even in Hawaii, it's just
Even
more
in
subtle.
Hawaii,
Yeah.
barely, but barely. But you know, the sun comes up in the east, sets in the west. Everybody accepts that, but but they can't accept earthquakes as a natural happening. They can't accept snowstorms as a natural happening. They can't accept tsunamis as a natural happening. You know, they have to, like, as mankind, we have this idea that we're supposed to be able to control it, predict it, and save human lives. But the point is not for every life on the planet to be saved. The point is to live with the earth in
Yes.
ho'oponopono. So in right relationship. And you know, for me, that's something that Reiki has pointed out over and over again and is exemplified by you know, somebody coming to first degree and you know, 3 days later they get fired from their job and
That's
they
true.
go, well, this happened because of Reiki, and then you're waiting for the big sledgehammer. And then they go, but that was the best thing that could have happened to me. So, you know, it's that same effect. It's like once we step into Reiki and step into this consciousness of, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you, then our job is to accept what's happening and basically make the best of
Yes.
it.
Yes.
So I was just so moved by the stories actually that were in the papers that I read anyway, and in NPR, the National Radio Broadcasting System of the United States. Who knows? Well, anyway, and the stories that came out of there were stories not about victims, but about people who kind of got the value of what they had. So this one man was trying to tie up his boat when you just naturally, because he was a fisherman, when the earthquake happened, and the boat just got sucked out of his hands and went somewhere. I mean, it just disappeared. And the news broadcaster who was interviewing him said, well, aren't you upset? Like, you've lost your boat and you've lost your livelihood, and you know, are you going to, you know, ask for restitution or whatever? And he said, no. He said, you know, all of my family is alive. We have our land, and we have our two hands, and we can rebuild. You know, it
Yes.
was like the this really interesting difference between sort of our Western reaction, where somebody is to blame, and then once you find the person or the thing to blame, then we get to be victims. And it's this very interesting dialogue. And I really loved, there were several stories like that, and I really loved that those stories that came from the actual people who were involved were different, you know, had a different tenor to them.
Yeah, I love that. I do. And it's such a great illustration of the fact that I believe, you know, when we tap in with, when we're working with Reiki and we connect with nature, life, you know, pure life, life source, and change is always, you know, what's the saying is there's nothing that stays the same except change. Or something like that. And so change is a natural progression, and the fact that people get to benefit from whatever is unfolding, even if it's not what we want. It's those of us who feel like, you know, we need to have it in our way, the way it should be, and not let go, that it does. I really especially love your example of Reiki students who, because all of us who teach Reiki have seen this over and over and over and over and over again all these years, is that, you know, you bring a little bit of you know, support into our lives through Reiki, and things shake up that, you know, and usually it is, it's the things that are not really in harmony to begin with, or not Pono to begin
right,
with,
exactly.
are the things that start to, you know, shift.
Right.
So I think it is. I think it's a beautiful thing. And I, as you said, you were talking about the, you know, these people who have, even the fact that, you know, many people lost their lives, and we in our culture believe that, you know, the longest life and losing a life is a bad thing, or, you know, and dying. And I had a very politically incorrect reaction to 9/11, and I had to keep it kind of a secret because, it upset people. But my first response when I saw what happened at 9/11, and it was just my, it was a reflective response. It wasn't a not conscious thought, was, wow, what a way to go. And I was sort of, you know, not envious in a real way, but just sort of admiring how many souls went in one big bang.
Right.
I mean, that was my initial reaction. And I really had to keep it secret from most people because it would have upset them, and they wouldn't have understood why I that was the first thing that came to mind for me. But that was it. And so same with the tsunami. It's like we are mortal beings, and when we go, we go. And you know, sometimes to go in a dramatic way is appropriate. So
It is really, really interesting, because I feel that the practice of Reiki has really changed my attitude toward death, and certainly my attitude to what happens after my physical body dies. That has shifted enormously. And so in some way, and I use, well, I don't know, should I say this? Well, okay. So in some way, I have much more to live for, and I have much more to die for. It's like, if I can be in, right relationship, we will say, or the appropriate relationship where everything is working in a regenerative, process in my life, then when I die, I will move on to another, what I would call regenerative, relationship or lifetime. And, for me, that's something that I look forward to, because, I think we have in this era anyway, really seen, a lot of the damage and, heartbreak that can come through people who are not willing to be responsible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can't do anything about them. You know, I would just love to, but I don't get what I could do except to not be that way myself.
And I think for me, it's also accepting that that's where the acceptance again, it is. And I would say also with Reiki, you know, over the years and sharing Reiki with people in who are dying. In fact, I did a fair amount of volunteer work with Hospice Hawaii in my earlier years as a Reiki master before I started to travel a lot. And it was getting to see that Reiki isn't about, you know, avoiding death at all costs, which is part of sort of our cultural perspective.
Yeah.
But that that the Reiki supports a beautiful death a lot of the time.
Yes.
And it tends to, you know, be there, and that people when I would be doing Reiki for someone, that their family members, you know, there was a whole mix of, I actually had someone once say that they didn't want me to do Reiki for their grandmother because they were afraid, you know, that they'd heard from somebody else that, you know, if it's their time to go, Reiki may, you know, will, you know, support that process and make it gentle. And they were afraid it might speed up the process. So they didn't want their person to have Reiki. In fact, I had a woman who, in Hawaii, whose granddaughter had me come and do some treatments for her. And the grandmother had finally said she didn't want any more Reiki. because she was afraid it was going to make her live longer. And she was done. She was ready to go. She refused any more medical care and things like that. And I wasn't able, I didn't speak, she was Japanese. I didn't speak her language to try and reassure her that, the Reiki would not, you know, prolong her life beyond what was appropriate for her. But, at least that I knew of. That was my belief. Again, it's all belief and assumption.
Right. But what do they call that in research? The stories.
Anecdotal.
Anecdotes about this particular process is that what Reiki will do will maximize people's consciousness and also, allow the time of their death to be really clear.
Yes. Oh, I like that phrase. I haven't heard it that way. Be really clear. That is good.
You know, it doesn't drag on infinitum. And I think that there's a place where people making those decisions, like this woman did, is really a powerful decision on the part of loving themselves, loving their family, being grateful for what they have had, feeling at peace with what they've done, and now they're ready to go.
Yes,
I think that's wonderful. Yeah, great.
It is. It's wonderful.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, Maureen, we're kind of at the end of the show.
Yeah,
if you can imagine already.
We managed to go all sorts of threads, which I loved. It was great.
Yeah, but I love this process of Ho'oponopono, and I was there at the Hawaii conference, and at first when you suggested this theme, I thought, oh no, what is she doing now? So, just for the record, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you, and I love you.
Oh, and Phyllis, I also am sorry, and please forgive me, and thank you, and I do truly love you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a great conference, if I may say so.
Thank you. I loved it.
Yeah.
Even with all the work I had, it was transformative for me personally. You know, I've never been the same since, in a good way.
Yeah. Great. Great. Yes. That's wonderful. And I was able to give people a little piece of Hawaiian Japanese culture from my grandmother that I felt like will shift their understanding of the story of Reiki, of who my grandmother was, and how she was with Reiki. That for me was a truly valuable gift.
Well, and it was huge for so many of us.
Yeah.
It was a really beautiful, moving experience, and it touched us very deeply. I remember at that conference, as you shared your grandmother's story, and at the end of your sharing, the room was silent. And it was just because we all took it in on so many different levels, is that words were just so inadequate to respond to it. It was a very energetic experience. It was just very beautiful.
Great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, Maureen, thank you very much for being on the show. It's just wonderful to have you again.
My pleasure. Anytime. And I look forward to seeing you in Hawaii in December.
Yes. I'll be there.
Great. Thanks.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.